the proper use of slips and the dangers they represent. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Paul Platt here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob is a CFI who owns Bob Miller Flight Training at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. Bob, as always, we appreciate your being here this week.
Well, it's my pleasure, Paul. Glad to be here.
In the current edition of Over the Airwaves, the June issue, you have an article headed Slips, a Powerful Tool. Now, when I was learning to fly, my primary training was in little tailwheel airplanes or rocket champs, and I was flying out of a little kind of rural airstrip where the approach to the active runway that was almost always in use because of the prevailing winds brought us in over a stand of trees and before we got to the runway approach. And so one of the things they taught us early on, and one of the things, by the way, the champ did beautifully, was the slip. It was a great way to lose a bunch of altitude, especially in an aircraft with no flaps. Tell us what you're talking about when you say it's a powerful tool, and explain the difference between a forward slip and a side slip.
Okay, in terms of a powerful tool, like in the champ or a tail aircraft that does not have flaps, it does really facilitate the steeper descents, the ability to come down without gaining airspeed. But when we're beginning to use this maneuver with airplanes with higher wing loadings, sleeker airplanes, we have a far greater risk of seeing that slip turn into a yawed stall. And when we have a yawed stall, of course, that results in a spin. So it is a powerful tool if done properly. And in order to do it properly, there's a very, very simple technique, and that's to be sure the nose of the aircraft is well below, or the aircraft is well below anything close to a critical angle of attack. So the first thing that I teach whenever doing a slip is first, lower the nose. Lower the nose so that there's very little difference between the angle of attack and the relative wind. Then slowly apply the slip and everything will be fine. The article that I wrote was premised upon an accident with a replica model of a P-51. It was an experimental, it was an aircraft that was, it's full size for all intents and purposes and flies very much the same way as a P-51. The problem is he had gear problems. The gear would not come down, either side, left or right. And one of the techniques that he tried was to aggressively pull up and try to literally yank the gear down with centrifugal or some sort of force on the gear. And he got one of them down, and then according to witnesses, somebody on the ground on the radio advised him to slip the airplane to the left, then to the right, to see and try to put some lateral forces on the gear to bring it down. Shortly after he did that, it appeared to enter a slip, and then immediately the aircraft rolled to the right and into a nose-low attitude and then descended into terrain. The pilot was killed. This was a slip that went from bad to worse. It went from a slip to a yaw to a stall to a spin, all within the less time than it took me to describe that in one sentence. So if we're going to use the slip as a tool, we need to know how to use it properly, and we need to have proper training in order to do that. Simple enough.
Well, it occurs to me that when I was being taught, the only time it was really employed was, you know, to lose altitude quickly on a steep landing approach. And in a situation like that, you're probably already starting with the nose low, and, you know, it wouldn't be a situation where you're as likely to get into trouble. When do people do this that it does put them into trouble? What are some other cases where you might try a slip when it's dangerous?
Oh, okay. And I do this on flight reviews that I give. I ask an individual to, or even with my own primary students or instrument students, you know, they'll find themselves high in the approach, and I'll say, okay, let's go ahead and put it into a slip. And they very dutifully put one rudder down hard, and they use the aileron in the opposite direction. They cross-control the airplane, but it's still in a fairly significant nose-up attitude. My goodness, once we start adding all of that drag to the airplane, you know, we're increasing the stall speed enormously. So now we run the risk of a stall with that pitch-up attitude. And by definition, the airplane is heavily yawed. So what happens when we combine a stall with a yaw? We get a spin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we get ourselves into trouble. And so I find myself almost shrieking in the cockpit, lower the nose, lower the nose, lower the nose. And when we do that, then everything works out fine.
Okay, what's the difference technically between a forward slip and a side slip?
No real difference. It's just your perspective to the runway. If you're using it to align yourself with the runway just prior to touching down, you're in a forward slip. If you're out on the final approach course and you're using it to just slow the airplane down in the steep descent, that would be a side slip. They're almost identical maneuvers.
Okay. Listen, when we come back, Bob, I want to talk about something that you're doing at your local flight school and kind of get an update on your 13-week ground school that you started a couple of weeks ago. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with CFI Bob Miller over the airwaves. We're talking about something that is going on at Bob's own flight school at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York, and that is a 13-week ground school to address some areas that Bob was finding we had forgotten as pilots by the time we got to our flight reviews. These are all things that you need to know for the practical test standards or the knowledge test, aerodynamics, aircraft systems, things like that, and apparently have slipped away when we don't use them often enough. Bob, first of all, when did this 13 weeks start in this first cycle, and tell us how it's going?
It's going very well. The course is going exceptionally well. We've signed up about 40 students, not a big number, but we marketed it as a pilot refresher course to pilots, and we also marketed it to the general public in our media advertisements as a ground school in preparation for the private pilot certificate. So immediately we created both an opportunity and a challenge. The opportunity we created was the ability to train or retrain existing pilots while at the same time bringing in people off of the street into the flight school who wanted to learn about flying. That was the benefit that came out of this, the opportunity. But the challenge now is we have a class that's highly skewed. Half the class are experienced pilots. The other half are just never before having flown. So the dynamics that are taking place every Wednesday night from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the evening is really quite interesting, because we have a nice long break, a half-hour break in the middle, where everybody mingles and talks and asks questions. And we have another feature, too. The class starts at 7 o'clock, but we encourage people to come out to the airport at 5 o'clock. And we have the barbecue grills going and the soft drinks going. And this is a lovely time of the year in Buffalo, June. So we have a lot of cross-pollination between people off the street and our existing pilots. It's going extremely well. But I think one of the things that that is unique about this course is that it's not the traditional, we're going to go through the handbook of aviation for pilots. We're not going through the traditional ground school syllabus and curriculum and teaching the four forces of flight and things like that. We're doing that, Paul, but we're relating them to actual safety issues. And when done properly, you can keep people's attention when you remind them that 80%, fully 80% of all fatal accidents are attributed to pilot factors or pilot errors. So what we're discussing, and I remind them with each teaching point, this is something that will easily prevent any kind of an untoward incident in your aircraft. So there, I kind of hang that what-if scenario out to them with each new topic being being taught. It really is effective.
Well, now, you know, you bring up a scenario in which it would not be hard to imagine that pilots could get bored and the lay people off the street could be in over their heads. But frankly, Bob, some of the things that I saw in your syllabus were a little scary. You were talking about pilots who had forgotten, for example, that stall speed goes up when you're in a banked turn.
Yep.
And, you know, that tells me that we do have to get pretty basic with pilots.
We have. I can't begin to tell you how scary it is when I listen to the feedback from existing pilots. And one of the problems is the pilots close their minds. If I brought a group of typical gray-haired pilots into a meeting, a safety seminar, and said, today we're going to talk about stall speeds, you know, I'm going to get an oh-hum, arms crossed, I know all of that, don't bother telling me. But when I asked them to, I begged their indulgence, and I said, now, you veteran pilots in here, you understand this, but just stay with me as I attempt to explain it to the new folks that are coming in off the street. All right, so now I don't have them on the defensive. They're listening to me try to explain this concept to non-pilots. And guess what? They're listening.
Mm-hmm.
They're listening. And at the end of the session, I'll go up to several of these pilots, and I say, you know, George, I'm really surprised that you're here. You know, I mean, you know as much about this stuff as I do. And he said, no, Bob, you have no idea how much I've forgotten.
Huh.
You know, and they're admitting there. And if we're truly honest with ourselves, we all forget. My goodness sakes, unless we're teaching this stuff day in and day out, we'll forget it. I would never know. I could never begin to define the classes of airspace and all of the various rules of the airspace if I did not teach it every day. It defies that kind of memory. We just don't use it.
Well, I have to ask you the obvious question because, you know, I think as people who may have their own flight schools or be involved with flight schools look at your example here, they may think, you know, 40 people, barbecue, 13 weeks, this is a lot of trouble to go to. I have to ask you the question that occurs to me as a former marketing guy. Do you think this is leading to anyone becoming interested enough to become a primary flight student?
No question. You know, we charge $99 for this 13-week course. $99. And that barely covers, the materials that we have to put out. The hot dogs, we put a little can out there asking for a $2 donation. So in dollars and cents, the hot dog business kind of has offsetting income. I'm doing it because we are really branding ourselves here in Western New York with Bob Miller Flight Training. What I mean by branding, we are quickly being recognized as the go-to folks when you want to learn how to fly. And that's as a result of investing very heavily in advertising. And I go to my colleagues at the Cessna Pilot Center meetings where we gather together with 200 different Cessna Pilot Center representatives. And I ask the questions at the break, how much are you guys spending on advertising? Oh, we rely on word of mouth. We rely on this and that, and we're not making enough money to advertise it. And believe me, in 30 years of operating other businesses, you know, if you don't advertise, you die. And it's a simple fact of life. And I can't seem to get this through. The other thing that I've noticed in what we're doing, Bob Miller Flight Training is run by a guy with an MBA. That's me. I have a strong business background, strong business experience, who happens to be a flight instructor. Most flight schools have begun or are operating by good flight instructors, outstanding flight instructors, who unfortunately have a bit of weaknesses or lack of experience in running a business. So it's like back in the 50s, doctors used to run hospitals. Well, they've long since taken the physician out of the top slot in hospitals. They're run by professional administrators. If we had flight schools in America run by people who understood administration and business and marketing and return on investment and people skills, rather than strong flying and teaching skills, we would see a tremendous increase in the number of people going through flight training. I really believe that.
You know, it's interesting, Bob, to watch the behavior of successful business people during a recession. I don't know about Buffalo, New York, but I know here in the Salt Lake area, the big slump in car sales did not mean they stopped advertising the dealerships.
No, you're exactly right. You watch out there. In fact, there's a great example is that if you want to be successful, look at people who are successful. This recession is really in Buffalo. We're in the Rust Belt up here. we never did prosper. And when you add a recession to that, we've got lots of people out of work. We've got car factories up here that are closing. But, you know, frankly, Paul, we're not marketing to the out-of-work assembly line worker. Mm-hmm. We're not. We're marketing to the guys that are running the businesses, the law offices, the physicians, the business owners. These are the people that are coming through Bob Miller Flight Training right now, and I make no apologies for that. They're also the people that are buying airplanes from us. They're also the people that are not squabbling over the prices that we have to charge in order to give them the best instruction. You know, the day of trying to offer cheap flying flight instruction on the cheap in order to bring students in is long gone. And whenever you do any business on the cheap, eventually it's going to go out of business. We try to run a quality operation, and we target it to people who pay for it. Our parking lot, when we look at our school, has and again, no apologies, believe me, and I probably evoke some emails, but, you know, we've got BMWs out there. We have Lexuses out there. There's at least 30% of any community is operating above the recessionary economy, at least 30%. So market to that 30%, and when the economy comes around and the factory worker can afford to take lessons again, he or she will come out and do it. But we can't go out of business simply because the car companies are going out of business. We've got to come up with, you know, I learned a phrase in business school, innovate or die.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that again, innovate or die. Choose your market carefully. Figure out where the dollars are and go there. You see, it doesn't take, it's not rocket science here.
Well, and you know, ironically, too, there's not that much difference in percentage between the cost of going to a flight school with that philosophy and going to, you know, the first rusty learn to fly here sign you pass. I mean, there's just not that much difference in cost when you really look at it.
No, because oftentimes we can get them through their ratings much more quickly.
Well, Bob, as always, you've given us a lot to think about. Good luck with the rest of your course. And when it's over with, I want to get a report and see how the whole thing went.
Thanks, Paul, very much.
My guest has been CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. You can find Bob's writings and more information at www.overtheairwaves.com, and the June issue just went up. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.